Rookie Fever, the show that looks closely at NFL rookie values all year long.
Let's go! Let's get this show going, man.
Hurry up, hurry up!
With your hosts, Swagzilla Zero G.
We can't all be winners.
And Mike, the Feverish Fanero.
It's never in a vacuum! Nothing is in a vacuum!
The Rookie Fever Podcast.
We're just having fun and we're working, baby. That's it,
baby. Let's go. Wait, two.
Welcome back to Rookie Fever, episode 374. Rookies galore, we know you want more. We are here, as always, with the Feverish Fanero.
What up, what up?
Needed to cough so bad through the intro, but I couldn't go on
complete mute, actually.
Because of everything, the way my system's hooked up, it would have like cut out some of the music. I apologize. Feverish, how are you?
Good, man. I was looking at our guest in the third box on the screen here, just grinning from ear to ear with the intro music and how he was even laughing at me saying nothing's in a vacuum. I love that smile.
That's right, man. We brought him back. Dave Wright, first one to tell us how he feels about rookies after the rookie draft. So this is going to be an interesting show. I don't know quite how this is going to go because I know we have a lot to digest as we're still getting into our rookie drafts. Everybody wants to know who to pick 101. That's Caleb Williams. Anything else and you're not super flexy? That's one thing I could get off my chest, but we got to get to Dave Wright really quick.
So, Swags, I like how you said you had to cough. No, you were just getting emotional like I was hearing that intro, because that's what it was, man. It's been too long, gentlemen, and we got to talk a little bit before the show. It's good to be here.
It has been too long. For anybody that's wondering why it's been so long, we have been trying to ask Dave on for probably about 5 months, and he's always got other obligations. And then I saw that he was on Dynasty Hot Sauce, and I was like, okay, bro. I see you dusted it off. You're coming on. And here we are.
We're here now. And in the same robe.
Dave's like, I'm finally ready now that the draft's over. And I'm like, well, we're still talking about the same shit we were talking about before.
Pretty much. I want to know, Dave, just to be sure, we are wearing something underneath the robe, correct?
Yeah, I don't want to know. Maybe I don't want to know. The way I imagined it is
freaking
nice.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, it's like, you guys probably don't play Fortnite. My son plays Fortnite, and Peter in Fortnite is ripped. And that's how I see Dave in his robe.
I'm not Peter for sure, but let's just hope I don't have
from the Family Guy.
Yeah. Oh, okay, not Peter. Okay, there we go.
Yep.
Family Guy.
Yep, Peter from Family Guy. He is ripped in Fortnite, and that's that's what just happened to Dave.
Well, hopefully, I don't get too heated with some of these rookie takes, and like I used to just take clothes off, and we got too excited. So we'll have to.
Yeah, we can skip that.
So we're kind of doing the same thing as we've been doing. We want to know how Dave feels about rookies, the ins and the outs. As I say, the trials, the tribulations. From bliss to devastation. I want to know if you guys think that this trade I made is devastating super quick.
Ooh,
before we throw it to Fanero to throw it to Dave. So I traded away 110 and 309 for Isaiah Pacheco and a 208. And it's my first ever Isaiah Pacheco share. Wasn't too into him. I think that he's the solidified running back on that team as of now. Team sounds excited. Yep. They've even made it sound like they could use him a little bit more in the passing game while they're waiting for Rice to come back off suspension. Anyway, that who cares, right? Was that a stupid trade to make?
Dude, for me, you traded the 110 for a running back that doesn't exist in this draft.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you have a starting running back that Kansas City loves that, honestly, I actually expect to have a little more volume in this offense this year. So I love that straight up, to be honest with you, the 110 for Pacheco. And then to move up to the 208, I think you legitimately get some of these players that I was telling you pre-show
that
I'm really interested in the 208, where the 309 is like, ugh.
Yep. So in that draft now, I have like a 204, a 208, love a 210.
It. Oh my God. I would love that spot. I get Pacheco in the first round. I don't have to deal with the first round, which is incredibly top heavy.
Especially after that eight, you know?
Yeah. That's what depending I'm saying. Top heavy. Oof. Yeah. When you're down. Yeah. When you're down in that last four picks, it's like, isn't that kind of, we talked about that pre-show, right? Isn't that kind of like maybe the 208 even, like, you don't know, like, there's a pretty big range in there where it's like, pick your poison, especially this early. Like I said, I think there's going to be some risers with just, you know, there's some wide receivers with just ridiculous landing spots. But yeah, I like it, dude. I like that trade.
Since the NFL draft, it's like, it's made me want to trade away my picks even more, especially out of that like top five to top eight. Even more, I want to just move them away for a solidified bet. And I don't always feel that way. Usually I'm kind of like, how can I buy my way back in with some of these players on my team? But now if I'm moving back in, I'm kind of like trying to use my 25s or 26s to get in this draft, see if I can get a guy here and there. Because it is still fun. I love rookie drafts. And that's what this is all about. Like, I love rookie drafts, rookie fever. It's why we do the show. You know, there is something incredibly fun about these rookies and just being in the draft with your league mates. So I get it that people want to be in those and they want to have that fun. But when it gets to me, I think I'm just kind of like, like the players have already lost value, just like we knew they would. But you can still get people to take those picks before they have the players for points in my lineup.
Hey, what did you think?
It's weird whether you say, like, we knew that these picks would get be devalued, but the maxim that we always hear is
the players.
But these picks, you know, your picks get more valuable the closer you get to your rookie draft, but I do not feel that's the case this year. And I think that's it's something I've been harping on for a couple of years now, is that I don't, when you're sitting there holding on to that 110, I wonder what you could have got. Not, I'm not like, this isn't a criticism or anything, but like, what that 110 would have been 2 weeks ago, you probably could have gotten like the 204 for, like, on, instead of like,
fair point.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And I think what deals people miss because they're trying to get the most value out of their pick. I just think that when everyone's doing that, holding onto their picks, and then once things solidify a little bit, then they make the moves. I still think this is a great move by Swags, on Swags' part, but you know, the moves you don't make, sometimes you regret them. I know everyone says sometimes the best moves you do, you know, you always hear the opposite of that as well, but especially for rookie drafts, the late first, I'm not liking that position right now. So I think it's just a sharp move.
And I think it's also something else I'm noticing. And I know you both probably heard me say something similar to this before, but it's not always what we know now, but what we knew then. Like, try to remember what you knew then. And for how long were we talking about how this draft class wasn't a strong running back class? And then we get here and everybody's like, yeah, there's no running backs. Like, we've been talking about that. We knew that. Like, you thought some were all of a sudden going to emerge because of draft weekend. So people seem kind of shocked by.
I did. I've been saying that for months. You're all sleeping on these running backs. Just wait for one to hit Dallas. Just wait San Diego. They just didn't land in those spots.
Hey, you know, I got my running back to the Rams.
Yes, you did. Yeah, and you mentioned that on the last show.
Yeah. So I did get my running back to the Rams.
He's a Kyren Williams kind of knockoff with a little more burst. So,
you know, come on.
Muddy backfield now.
Blake Corum is taking that over.
Just saying, yeah. That's what I just said, but maybe a little differently.
You said he was a Kyren Williams knockoff.
Yeah, like, they're the same guy to me. So, like, like, to me, okay. I know he's a Michigan guy, right? So you're, like, all quorumed up.
I think, no, it's not even that. I mean, I'm a size guy, and we've got, like, a 195 to 199 in Kyren Williams to, like, the 215 to 220 in Blake Corum.
I don't know. I think Corum can absolutely win the job. I didn't, by calling him a knockoff, I just meant like they're similar players to me, and Kyren Williams had one hell of a year last year, so I thought that was a compliment.
I agree.
But
I do agree.
But maybe knockoff is a negative word.
But I just, to say the least, I think there's room for both of them. But I don't know where to draft Blake Corum at the same time.
It's tough because of that. Yeah, I agree. But you didn't like Kyren coming in. So, and Kyren's like definitely a bit of a surprise. You could see him being like a 1 year wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could see that. If Corum's the real deal,
Yeah.
It happens all the time. Like all these backs that have one really great year, Damian Pierce, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's
Phillip
like,
you Lindsay.
Think, yeah. You just think that that's what they're going to be forever. Mm-hmm. And Kyren Williams, you're right. Like he's a little bit smaller. He wasn't really supposed to be that. He was a late round draft pick. Like
had a couple of injuries too.
People, yeah. It doesn't add up really. It adds up more.
Like there's a ton of those guys who are either undrafted or late draft. Cause what was Kyren like fifth round? Do you guys remember?
So I was going to say fourth, but probably
fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
Same with like Damian, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
And now they go get Mixon. So they obviously, they use these guys, but there's something they don't quite see.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, Dave, we want to know all about your rookie life.
Gosh, where to start?
He was a fifth round pick. How do you feel? What do rookies, Dave, mean to you? When you think rookies, how they apply to your strategy or anything? What, like, it's a very open-ended question. You could take that anywhere. So I think all of our guests have.
The first thing I think about is just how enjoyable the rookie process is for me. I really enjoy playing the fake GM part. I think that's a lot of fun to do. It's what I used to love about Madden the franchise mode Madden, and that's what I get to do in Dynasty. So that's the first most important part for me is one, it's I get to play in my spreadsheets. I get to like banter with my buddies about rookies, incoming rookies, and for both just my NFL fandom and my fantasy football fandom. So that's one thing, is just how much fun it is. And then number two, I think it's a good way for me to try to evaluate myself in that looking back of what I valued in my rookies. So I've been playing Dynasty now for 12 years. So to look back about what I used to value, how much overconfidence I had making picks. And now looking back at, you know, my misses, my like drafting, I'm going to just come out and be honest about it. I drafted freaking, who's the little guy from UMass that went to the Cardinals?
Oh, Rondell Andy Moore.
Isabella, no. Andy Isabella. I drafted Andy Isabella.
He's a little guy. Rondell Moore's a little guy. But and you know you love him.
Oh, I still
Andy
do.
Andy Isabella, though.
Yeah. Andy Isabella.
Him over DK Metcalf in a league because.
Oh, yep.
And my home league, my Tail 2 Rivals Listener League, it was I drafted him over it because, and what I did, it really taught me a little bit about the wide receiver position was that double counting or just overemphasizing speed at the wide receiver position. I think it's important, but if like, and the combine and how overrated it is because, and especially now with all these NFL teams have all the GPS tracking data and what have you. But I think just understanding one, having some humility and knowing that you're going to get things wrong, and two, just what to value, like my process where it's come and just, not being like a spreadsheet warrior all the time. And there's other things that go into it. I think those are kind of my biggest things besides just the fun part is just the evaluating me and my process. I think that's kind of, you can have a score. There's a scoreboard with rookies. And I think it's good to reflect on yourself and how you value them and now where you are, your process wise now. So that's kind of what in life in general, that's kind of where I am right now is where I'm looking back. And looking back at my past decisions and what I've done is it's kind of a good self tool. Like, you know, just to be able to be honest with yourself and say, hey, what you did, what worked, what didn't, what you can change. And that's kind of how I look at rookies and not like just celebrate what I win, but how can I get better at it?
I love that. And that's kind of what we're trying to do is let the listeners live vicariously through us and learn from some of our mistakes so they don't have to make them all themselves. You bring up Isabella, though, and it makes me think of Keyshawn Johnson, Hakeem Butler. Like, how many people do you think messed up with a Cardinals wide receiver at some point in their dynasty lives? Like, probably a lot of us.
Everyone since Larry Fitzgerald, essentially.
Josh Rosen, I mean, I know he's not a wide receiver, but him himself, like, first of all, one of my biggest dynasty mistakes, probably. Second of all, I wanted to find things that were attached to him that didn't even matter. It was ridiculous.
Dave, before we went on, you said, I kind of feel like the guidance that the community gives is about 5 years old. And I wanted to ask you like what you meant by that. But I was like, nah, I'm going to ask him on the show what he meant by that. What did you mean by, I mean, I have a hypothesis of what you mean by that, but what did you mean by that?
So one, we talked about a little bit too about when Spikes brought up his trade about waiting until right before your rookie draft, your rookie picks gets the most value. I just think you miss out on opportunities that way. So I think that's old news. And then also building from the running backs and building through rookies, that was great. when everyone was valuing Dez Bryant when he was 28 years old as one of a top three dynasty wide receiver, or back in the day, like you were seeing, look at DLF ranks and these older wide receivers were still top five
absolutely
at their position. And these rookies who had actually even flashed in year one weren't in the top 12 yet. And so you could just get, it was like stealing of just pumping up this youth. But now there's just, I feel like youth is overrated.
Yeah.
And that we've overcorrected because everyone wants to get ahead of it. And you can no longer, you can't get ahead of it. I mean, people are arguing that there's two top five dynasty wide receivers already in this class.
Yep.
And you can't get ahead of that. There's no meat on the bone. Yeah. And there's just downside from that because if you're wrong, and I'm all about taking risks and just capitalizing on your, and not be, because you'll be wrong in a lot of ways, no matter what, because what you don't know. But that being said, you got to have some upside, some wiggle room. And I don't think there is that when you're chasing youth, when you can get Stephon Diggs. I got Derrick Henry, Stephon Diggs for early second round picks in January, in February.
Yeah.
And that's, I think Derrick Henry's going to be a top five running back again this year because his speed, you know, his GPS tracking, he still was one of the fastest runners. I think it was more of an injury in the offensive line now. And in Baltimore, it's a better situation, better
great situation.
In a down year, he was RB8.
Yeah. And
it's a bad year for Henry. And on that offensive line that runs that much. Oh my God. Oh my God. That's almost scary.
So I used to be all about this the age curve and everyone talking about their age curves. And mm-hmm. now I'm just about more about like, hey, I'm okay. Like selling like at 25, 26 years old when they're that zenith of value, but then also buying back in when they're 28, 29 years old. And I mm-hmm. think that's a really smart move when instead of taking a swing on Keon Coleman or, you know, Ladd McConkey, I'm going to just try to get Stephon Diggs or even I'm trying to think some even older, like Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen's been dead for 5 years.
Yeah.
According to Dynasty. And that's just,
right.
I don't think that's the way to play. Fantasy points matter. Like, make fantasy points matter again. And I,
there you go.
And that's what going back to Pacheco, that his fantasy points are going to matter. And that's why that usage that Spike said with that pick is so good.
Yep. And that to be clear, I think what Dave's saying too, with like not having any meat left on the bones is like, let's say Harrison hits. I think he will. But the price you have to pay to get into that is you're already paying for that hit. You're not getting any kind of value or deal in that. And then if he misses, and I'm not saying wide receiver two is a miss, but let's say he's Garrett Wilson and he's just a wide receiver two. Garrett Wilson to me is the most expensive wide receiver two you can get in Dynasty. I don't even think he's cracked the top 20 yet. I think he's been like 22, 24. Maybe I'm wrong and just blowing smoke here. But Garrett Wilson is ranked as like a top 8 wide receiver in Dynasty, and he's never even been a wide receiver one. But people talk about him like he does that for you on a daily basis. Like he's you start him no matter what, and you have to because of the price you paid for him. But chances are, like, you have your Diggs, you mentioned, some of those other vets. Tyreek Hill, you can probably get kind of cheap right now. Tyreek is an interesting one, though, because he came out and told us he's going to retire at a certain age. So that does worry me a little bit. I also am an ageist, even within this conversation. So Tyreek does worry me a little bit because of that. But the price some of these people pay for some of these wide receivers to me is crazy.
Yeah, so I remember weeks ago you bringing up exactly what – sorry, Dave. Weeks ago bringing up exactly what Dave just said, which was, you know, like, why are these guys already in the top 10? Like, I'm just not there. Like, they're not even on a team yet. You know what I mean? Like, what's mm-hmm. going on here? Go ahead, Dave.
No, I mean, that was kind of, yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of like
took was that
like,
one from you.
No, I was ready to follow you down your path, too. And I was like, I was ready to go. But.
Yeah, no, that's totally valid. And I think it's like, it's kind of like a scale is tipped, right? Like, we were all buying into this. We were all buying into this. It all made a lot of sense to each and every one of us. And then it just very quickly got out of hand. I know Swag says like rookies are the new sleeper. Like it's actually like worse than that. You know, sleepers were still like late round draft picks, right? Like these are way beyond sleepers now. You're right. They're being compared to Tyreek Hill. They're being compared to Stephon Diggs. They're being compared and they haven't even played it down. And don't get me wrong. There's some elite wide receivers in this 2024 class, but, we're not talking about them. There's always a few elite players in every single draft. We're talking about the draft class. We're talking about rookies. We're talking about rookies in 2023, 2024, and 2025. And just in general, it just feels like the scales have totally tipped into overvaluing this process, overanalyzing these players, and just having, like, what Swags likes to say, unhealthy relationships with them, because we've known them far too long, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. Like, I think getting to know them at this point, from now all the way until training camp and preseason, that's a lot of time to get to know these players. Yeah. And we're going to get a lot of great information from teams. I know a lot of it's smokescreen and stuff like that, but I listened to some of that, especially coaches and players talking about if a certain player is just shining. You know, those are things that absolutely move the needle, whether you want to say they do or they don't, they do. We've seen that with Bryan Edwards. We've seen that, you know, we've seen it go the wrong way. But the point is, there's just more information, and it's just more fun, I think, to take a little bit of a backseat during that time where everyone's just going too hard.
Well, and I think to add to that, I think there's also just so much talent in the NFL right now. Sure. That everything, like, we'll go back to Garrett Wilson super quick, just as an example because of this conversation. But it sounds like I just shit on Garrett Wilson. Really, I just am kind of crapping on his value. Garrett Wilson is a stud. I'll take him on my teams. Like, I have no problem with that. But the price to acquire him is more than what he's done yet. We're still hoping that he becomes a wide receiver one. He probably will at some point. So he'll have some seasons like that. But the truth is, there's so many wide receivers that it just doesn't matter to me like it does to the people that are trying to acquire Garrett Wilson on the daily. Like, the guys that are like, oh, I want my Garrett Wilson share. And then you're kind of like, well, why? You know, like, tell me why. And they talk about it like he's doing that on a daily. And he just hasn't yet. I think he will. I mean, Nico Collins did it before he did. And people are still going to be more into Garrett Wilson this year. It's weird.
They're good points. I get it.
I miss Garrett Wilson's rookie price, like, where you could get him at sometimes at 108. Like, and because there was a lot of, who's the wide receiver one in this class? Like, I felt like there was, I think he's been more expensive ever since, despite, like Swag saying, mm-hmm. he hasn't had that big monster season yet, but he's way more expensive now.
And then to what Dave kind of opened up with when we were talking to him about what rookies mean to him, trade for, you can probably acquire Garrett Wilson next year. Even if he does better with the extra year he puts on himself, like, Garrett Wilson is about to get cheap right before his breakout age. These guys don't, I don't know, it's crazy. I told you I talk too much, Dave.
Well, this is what I came on for.
I'm muting my mic.
Nice.
Dave. Old man yelling into the mic. Oh, this is.
Dave, this is a popular question. And everyone has a different answer, but there are some common answers. So, and I know you've been very busy, so you probably haven't heard all of our episodes, but did Rookie Fever ever fool you? Can you give us an example of Rookie Fever just, you know, getting in your head, maybe as an early Dynasty player, maybe, and you followed, you know, that, like, you know, for example.
It could be somebody that totally hit or somebody that missed. So yeah. It doesn't any. Yep. Just how have you been fooled?
Oh my gosh, too many times than I can count. I mean,
that is a common answer, actually.
That's how have I been fooled? I think I kind of said this already. I think I've just been fooled by thinking that I know more than I do. We don't know how these players are going to look in camp. We don't know how a lot of these depth charts are going to shake out, especially for the guys that aren't the top, you know, the first round wide receivers. Mm-hmm. We don't. There's going to be mini camps. There's going to be rookie camps, and there's going to be a lot more buzz. That's going to, as Fanero was going to say, there's going to be risers here in May and June. And I just think having some having some humility here as I grandstand here to get a real answer. But I'd say, how have I been fooled? Man, that's a good question. I'm like, I'm trying to think of an old Minnesota Vikings wide receiver. Here's the thing, because I think we've talked about this a little bit with rookie. I guess my biggest thing is that it's okay to miss on a player, like a quarterback, quarterbacks especially. Like, I've missed on a lot of quarterbacks, and it's because, one, I've missed because I didn't draft Josh Allen. like when it was such a super way to do it, because I was really snobbish about accuracy and that other teams passed on him or what have you. And similar here, I think having some humility with these coming back to this class is having some humility with these quarterbacks is like they can develop and they're not finished products, and that coaching matters, their situation matters. And it's just not this, you can't just analytics and some fancy metrics your way through quarterbacks. There's more to it. So I think that's kind of what I learned a little bit more about quarterback evaluation. And I think the way I value these three I guess there's four or five, six now.
Six in the top 12.
But I think that just understanding one, the importance of quarterback in rookie drafts, Superflex, and two, hitting on them in the late first when people have passed on them, and what that has done, what that can do when your team wasn't very good, and how it can just totally transform your whole dynasty roster on hitting a quarterback that wasn't a premium 101, 102, 103 pick. So that was a really rambling answer, but that's how
I loved it. I love that you went into the quarterbacks, because I'll ask you both the same question. Swag, what do you guys, and I'm leading you to water clearly, but what do you guys think the lowest hit rate? And when I say hit, I'm talking about becomes an actual NFL starter. That's it. Just becomes an NFL starter. Just plays for a team. What do you think the lowest hit rate of all positions is?
Tight end.
Tight end second.
Quarterback.
Quarterback.
Yeah.
And every single year, we think all of them are going to do great, right? And Superflex kind of forces you to take the gamble because, to be quite honest, it's worth it. We talked about, you know, Swag's getting Penix at 11. I mean, when you're talking about late first and he's a first, I mean, you're going to fail, right? So it's going to happen, right? We've seen it year in, year out. Like, there's so many quarterbacks that we overvalue during this point in the process. What three are going to fail out of those six?
Yeah.
Because you got to start asking that question now. Do you know what I mean? Because it's almost inevitable. It's almost inevitable, statistically speaking, that half of those top six picks will fail. Do we have to bring up all the names recently that have? Like, it just goes on and on. It's a much longer list of failure than success, actually, recently. Much bigger. But at this point of the season, right now, after the draft, these six quarterbacks are effing gold. Like, they're untouchable. They're so valuable. And I can't wait to find out which three are just going to be dirt, because it's going to happen.
And so one thing that you can, that's a trick too. That can be a little bit of a fallacy of the average of, hey, that's just the average. You could have five misses. So you could go for, like, because we've seen that, you go back to Justin Fields class and everything. Like, yeah, and there's been a lot of successful put. There, you know, we could have five misses. It's you could change the whole league too of having five hits.
Look at all the quarterbacks that just recently got traded for picks, including Fields. They're like sixth round picks, seventh round picks.
Yeah.
How's like a sixth round, seventh? Like, they're worthless. Like, to NFL teams, they're trading away quarterbacks who played in this league and started, which are considered hits. So how's a hit now? Because he started legitimately, right? And he's a seventh round pick. That's what he's worth in a trade. Do you know what I mean? Like, Fields is the most valuable. And what was he, 2/3? Like, it's really crazy how much we value quarterbacks right now versus how much they're actually going to be worth. So I love that you brought up quarterbacks. I love that that was your answer, that you're looking closer at that, because I feel like that's another thing that we just don't talk about enough. All these players fail. Don't get me wrong. We're talking about, you know, so many. We can all come up with wide receivers and running backs that fail. It's just the quarterback in particular gets pushed up in these drafts, NFL drafts, not rookie drafts, gets pushed up in NFL drafts because teams are so freaking desperate for an answer at that position. And as dynasty players, we have to recognize that. We have to understand that Bo Nix might have been a reach. You know, like, we have to, like, understand that, you know, Caleb Williams is going to have every single opportunity to fail. You know what I mean? Like, it's just going to be that way. And to me, the one thing I want to point out, and I know I'm rambling at this point, is the thing for me that is a little different this year is, like, a J.J. McCarthy and a Caleb Williams just being in just fantastic spots. Just in really nice, like, they built the teams prior to them being drafted well. Like, there are weapons on both of those teams to get excited about. We so often see these high draft picks go to the worst teams in the NFL. And I just don't think that Minnesota's a playoff team. I think Chicago is a playoff team now. Like, I think that stuff's legit. Like, I do think that there are some obvious indicators, which are situation and the team that they're on, which we keep, you know, I keep badgering on, is like how important that is. And yeah, I would love to have a crystal ball and figure out which three of these are going to fail because they're expensive.
Going off script a little bit, I have a question for you guys. So a big popular story here in New England has been the Patriots and what they didn't accept as trades for their pick. Has the idea of the Vikings trying to trade up for what it's apparently for Drake May and how much they're willing to give up, the Vikings were willing to do that, does that make you view J.J. McCarthy any different, or is that just a background storyline? That
I think as long as a team still makes that pick at quarterback that they were willing to offer, and I think it was the Patriots that said, I think it was the Patriots and the Cardinals said that there were a few offers and they weren't even close. I think both teams said that. So I think if I'm Minnesota, right, it's going to cost me a lot more to move up to get May, and I might like McCarthy, kind of like I've been saying on this past offseason. I felt the same way about all three quarterbacks last year. And I like them all for different reasons. Richardson, Young, and I'll say it. I like Young just as much as I like Stroud. They were all kind of the same. So it's got the cheaper guy. And that's what J.J. McCarthy is.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Swags? Do you view that, like, that trade speculation any differently for McCarthy? Because all through the draft process, I just all I heard was how Minnesota wanted to trade up no matter what for J.J. McCarthy. I've heard a lot of hate for Drake May actually too. So like a lot of not hate might be strong, but
I know what you mean. There's a downturn happening right now with him.
And I'm just curious if like, hey, is that some narrative? Is the narrative changing at all for you guys?
I think it changes it a little bit. Somebody said recently, I apologize for not knowing. First of all, I wasn't planning on talking about this. Second of all, I kind of don't care. I apologize. But somebody said recently, and I think it was good food for thought. They said, if it was one of you guys, I am sorry if I just sounded like a jerk. But kind of to the point that they pay attention when somebody uses high draft capital on a position they don't need. Like Gibbs, for example. And I'm going to say that for Penix, because they used high draft capital for a position they really don't need right now. And I'm paying attention to that. And same with McCarthy. If they're willing to move up to try to get him, but they're also trying to hit a position.
Good point.
So I think really we still want to proceed with caution.
That's a good point. But
I think that J.J. McCarthy is going to have every opportunity to beat out Sam Darnold, just like anybody that's been on a team with Sam Darnold has had. And I don't think Sam Darnold has done well holding on to that job. So with that said, I'm interested in J.J. McCarthy if I need a quarterback in Superflex, which, I mean, to me, like, you guys know how I am. You can never have enough.
Yeah.
But with then, you? Like, we just went back to – I mean, I'm no shit. Like, I'm in the shower today, and I'm thinking about things and the past a little bit, and I'm thinking, how good would some of my teams be if I didn't draft all those rookie quarterbacks, if I didn't have Zach Wilson or Trey Lance or Sam Darnold? You know, the list goes on, like we said. Like, if I didn't dupe myself into these things time and time again, I was probably thinking about this before I picked up Penix in that draft, to be completely honest with you. And then I go and do it again as I'm sitting here telling people to learn from our mistakes. But again, it was like the draft capital they used on a position that they didn't need. They weren't fishing for something they needed right now. They were trying to get something to develop for later. And that appealed to me a little bit. So to answer your question, because I know I didn't, I'm just being wishy-washy here. It does mean something to me, yes.
I actually like that you brought it up, Swags, because I kind of presented the rookie quarterback thing like we're not smart enough, or we're not looking at the success rate of these quarterbacks, and we just get swept up. You just gave us the reasons why we are swept up. You know what I mean? Like, you gave us the thought process of why we're in these rookie drafts, and we take the chances on the quarterback. Because if you hit there, man, it's just worth it. It's just so worth it. And for possibly 10 years.
Yep. And with Penix, I think, and I know we were talking about McCarthy with Penix, I think it's a unique situation where I'm going to have plenty of time to get out of him, mm-hmm. whether it's the Cousins owner being like, man, what if something happens, or people realizing that something is going to happen eventually, or a Cousins injury. There's his stock cannot depreciate as quick as what J.J. McCarthy's possibly could if he was the week one starter and then failed. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. It's a hypothetical. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying sure. That's not my take.
He's insulated by not hitting the field.
Yeah, exactly.
I got you. Where so, I mean, J.J. McCarthy's sooner than later.
Or even Bo Nix, you know, for another yep. example. If Bo Nix starts and then sucks, you don't have the yep. same amount of time as you're going to have with Penix.
Very fair. What were you saying, Dave?
Or just kind of similar with Jonathan Brooks. That's some argument people have had for valuing him is that his injury is known. Like people have, there's a built-in excuse already. I don't think it doesn't quite as play it up to the same level that Swags is saying, but I think it's at least a little similar.
Nice.
Dave, what right. about some hits? Who was a good rookie hit? Sorry, Finero.
You're good. You're good.
Some great hits. I think a lot of running back. Like I think Nick Chubb. Where
he's for been you.
Yeah, for me, it's like Nick Chubb. I had a ton of Nick Chubb. People were like, they were all over Sony Michel, the landing spot with the Patriots. And I was just like, you know what? Nick Chubb's a bigger back. I think he was just a better overall running back. He's fast. I think I nailed the Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb was just really paid off in a lot of ways, especially his rookie year when I think people were down because he wasn't seeing the field right away. And then he had a couple of big plays and then he exploded. Or not exploded, but started to really build up steam towards the season went along. I just really liked where I got Nick Chubb in drafts. I'm trying to think other rookies. I've been thinking about this whole topic was, and like going back to Swags' point about quarterbacks, the ones he's missed. And I think fantasy hasn't been around forever for a lot of people. Like people haven't been playing I think the majority of the audience, they haven't been playing Dynasty since they were sophomores in high school. Like a lot of us were with fantasy football or what have you. And as people get more experienced, they just realize that you're not going to hit on every pick. And I think that is, you have to have that in mind when you're trying to shoot for that upside at quarterback. But the reason why I bring this up is those third and fourth round picks of those hits that return that value, that they were these throwaway, you take some darts and you hit like the Tyreek Hills, the, who's the old guy that, I know Swags doesn't like him as much, or that's a bad characterization, but I know you've had some Tank Dell, like how much that has helped your roster hitting on that in the third and fourth round. And then,
absolutely.
And then getting out while the value's still there. Like I've traded off of, I needed to get a quarterback in a league and I took Tank Dell and Kirk Cousins, or no, Tank Dell and Aaron Rodgers. And, I think it was Devon Achain. They got me Kyler Murray in a pick. Like that's how that pick went. And I was desperate for a quarterback and that I really enjoyed just capitalizing on Tank Dell and what that brought off to me in my roster. So just like those third and fourth round picks that I wasn't like they were my guys or anything, but when they're on your roster, you take enough dart throws and what that can do to a roster when you get that kind of return on that late of a pick.
Dave, when do you start to let go of the promise that rookies bring? Like when do you start? And I know that comes that can also like vary depending on how high you picked the player, but like do you have a sense on when, like for example, I'll just give you an example while you're thinking. Swags absolutely will let go of players before I will. I know I hold on to them too long. I would argue that maybe he gets off them too fast. And maybe there's a happy medium, but his strategy of getting off of them sooner is way better. Like if I compare his strategy to mine, I have players that will never play on my starting lineup still in like all my teams. And it's the misses. And it's me not feeling comfortable with the misses and wanting them to hit at some point. Do you know, do you have a sense how long you wait on a rookie before you just give up?
No, I think I'm pretty much I think it's a really complicated question, to be honest, because it depends on what other people are valuing, Matt, if other people are still holding on. So it's like almost like a case by case basis, because it's a finicky thing. Some people are like, oh, I'm out, you know, or because people with Breece Hall, when he had that injury, we had people were talking about selling him for any first you get for Breece Hall. And I was like, no, Breece Hall is a difference maker at running back. And we had had a bunch, and I think it was too much recency bias with the knee injuries and running backs not coming back from the injury as well with J.K. Dot. Like, there was a lot of these younger running backs getting major knee injuries. And I was like, look, Breece Hall is that good that I'm going to hold on to him. Whereas other players, and that I'm almost a case by case, but I think I have some people that I still hold out hope for. I think emotionally I hold out hope for, and I'll keep them in my squad. But like realistically in my head, I'm like, I know that they're not.
I got you.
Anymore.
I got you.
And I guess I bet you guys could guess who a couple of those players might be.
Well, but, and they also get to the point where, like you said, it depends on value. Sometimes it gets to the point where nobody wants them.
Yeah. Yep. So it's,
so you might as well hold on to them. I mean, right.
And I think when Swags lets go, just to characterize that, he's letting go at a price. Like, he knows, like, you know what? I like that price. Like, I can let go of him for a first right now because I'm worried. You know, I'm concerned. And right now, he's still worth it. Did I lose some value? Yeah, but I'm now going to get to restock and use that first to, like, try again. Like, yeah, I've decided. And it makes a lot of sense.
Everybody's valuing him as a wide receiver two when he's never been better than a wide receiver four. Yep, Let me go get a wide receiver two for him and get those points right in my lineup. Maybe I lose a couple years on age or something, but I replace the points right away, or I get to the points right away. It's not just that I drop them or cut them for something, but it's getting rid of them before everybody else wants to. That's when you have to. I'll say time and time again, I think that's more important than finding the next guy, is getting rid of them before everybody else wants to.
I think the big point to highlight what Swag said too is that you're getting fantasy points for it. And that's what the difference is you're not just trading for value. You're actually getting fantasy points. And I think that's something that I've had a lot more success. You ebb and flow in your leagues and based on where your team structure is and what have you. But in a couple of leagues, I was a huge ageist for years because I thought that was the value. Keep pushing the age limit. The last year or two, I've kind of flipped a little bit where I'm more willing to go out, get that veteran and give those things. And I've had some of the most success I've had in the last 2 years by going veteran heavy. And what happens is and this is like some just common advice for listeners, is that you'd be surprised if you went and you did some power rankings in your league, who actually finished first in your league or won it all. I think a lot more people would be surprised that they were wrong to start with. Or what happened is these teams that were power ranked one, they actually had these guys that you had these inflated value, and people were able to trade off of them because people were still chasing that value and they could go get that win now pieces. And I think that's, people are always walking, oh, your team hit that age cliff, but you're still able, you get draft picks every single year. It replenishes itself. And to be able to keep pushing for that win now, people are surprised how long you can push that win now window for.
Well, and I like the age cliff idea, is because you can always push, you can always have the age cliff if you want to. You mentioned Henry and Diggs and what you're getting those players for. Like, you can keep just like turning that roster into those aged out players, as we say, just to keep going. Like, you can always get, think about how long you get Larry Fitzgerald for nothing.
So,
you can always ride that age cliff and put money in your pocket. That's what we're trying to do here anyway. We're not trying to make sure you have the most valuable lineup. At the end of the year, only one team gets to win. And the chances are you're not going to repeat. It happens here and there, but you get that one chance to win. You have that window of opportunity to win. You take the trophy home, the money home, whatever it may be, one time. But we're also concerned about value that doesn't pay out.
We're concerned about value. We're concerned about creating a dynasty and just having this all-around.
What is a dynasty?
Yeah, so, I mean, I personally think that you have a dynasty as soon as you have back-to-back wins.
I've had a couple of those.
Yeah, I officially call that a dynasty if you can back-to-back it, because I think it's so rare, so rare. I came close a couple times.
I do agree with that. How many years in a row do you have to make the playoffs to be considered maybe a dynasty?
Honestly, that's a difficult question because there's just so many teams in your league that just like tank for picks. So like, I don't like playoffs.
That's fair.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if you tell me you're making the championship game,
three out of four years,
I think I'm willing to have that discussion. But if you just say the playoffs, like, I don't know. I've had some bad teams make playoffs.
I think that's fair because I think it's easier to get into the playoffs than it ever has been, like the last two or 3 years. I think it's easier to get in than ever. And still so many teams want to tank.
Yep. There's basically four teams that give up about a third of the way through and then start to re-strategizing. So you're only really competing with two other teams to get into the playoffs. It's just a little... It's
super hard fair offer, but I'm going into rebuild mode.
Yeah.
And look, rebuilding is fun. Don't get me wrong. Like, rebuilding can be a lot of fun to do. That being said, it's when you're really competing against a lot more other teams that are rebuilding and those of assets... You know, what it does is it depreciates the win now assets. And that's why it gets cheaper for these win now teams, because more people are valuing those future pieces. And it just makes it easier to go get the Derrick Henrys and Stephon Diggses and the Keenan Allens and the Travis Kelce. Like Travis Kelce, I got him in the sixth round of a startup a couple years ago and carried in an Uber tight end premium. Even when he had a down parts of last year, carried my squad for a couple of years just because of how ridiculously cheap because of his age cliff.
I'm actually like low key proud of where this episode has gone. And I'll explain why. Like, you know, as quote unquote, I use air quotes analysts out there. The most fun I've had with this series is first off people admitting they don't know everything. This is so refreshing to hear. But in this particular case, Swags and I always talk about, but what can we do, for our next episode that's actionable? Like, what are actionable items? And I think this whole series, we've been talking about rookie picks, rookie strategy, very actionable things while other people were talking about profile. And what I like about this particular show in the series is how it's really from beginning to end been about that balance, that scale that we've been talking about, and how we all three of us feel like it's been tipped. And I don't think that that is groupthink. I don't think that is out there. You can capitalize off of that. Like, you can absolutely make that work for you. That is actionable advice. Because if we are correct, if we are giving you advice, if the three people that are speaking in these microphones believe what they're saying because of their dynasty leagues, because of their experience, and they're just being honest, where maybe it's hard to be, which is, you know, again, don't know all the answers. I need more information, just like every other dynasty player out there. I just really like the theme that this particular episode has taken since the beginning, which is like, wait a minute. There's a strategy built into this. Like if we as a community or as groupthink are overvaluing these rookies, what can we do to capitalize off of that? What can we do to change our teams? Like you said, Spaceman, you just got done saying, like, I used to be that. Like, that used to be me 2 years ago. There's a lot of people that have been in Dynasty for 1, 2, 3, 4 years that can learn from your experience before they get there. And that's something Swag said in the early of the show. So I think it's really cool. The three of us come back together and we're just really, you know, after months and we're just really on the same page there. And I think that's actionable.
Yeah.
Wisdom right there, man.
I'll tell you what, dude, some of my favorite stuff with these shows have been the landing spots, and you can't do that anymore because we're done predicting landing spots. But it's been a blast to have you on again. Obviously, again, that grin from ear to ear. But also, just I think this series from week to week, Swags and I will be like, we want to keep going with it, right? Like, listeners like it, right? We know our guests love it. We know other analysts love it, but we keep asking that question because we care, right? We want this to be something that our listeners enjoy clearly. But I'm enjoying the hell out of it. I'm enjoying the honesty we're getting out of everyone. In particular, I like that I know this is Swags' world, but we're knee deep in strategy talk instead of I miss player profiles. Don't get me wrong, but not that much. I really have enjoyed these, and we'll get into the players. We, like we said, we got months to get into that, and that'll be fun too. And I love that Swag said that in the early part of this show. It's like, we love rookies. That's why we started the show. Like we haven't moved away from that. We just want to supply our listeners with something different than everyone else is supplying. That it's just that simple. That's how we started.
Point soon, you're going to hear probably just Finero and I here. Yep. Digesting some of this more with you guys and going through what we're doing in some of those rounds, who we're chasing, who exactly. are not. That'll still happen.
Of course it is.
So with that said, Dave, like who's a player that you've got to have this year?
Ooh, I love
Can't
that
say question. Caleb Williams or Marvin Harrison.
Ooh, like so, that follow-up.
So I have a lot of – so in the leagues where I did try – I've been desperate for some quarterbacks in a couple of leagues because I've still haven't recovered from – this. It sounds weird, but I had a lot of older teams at quarterback where I had Tom Brady's and Drew Brees's, where I built up some really win-now teams, and I haven't – I thought they were going to put – more the Drew Brees. I thought there was going to be, I get a couple more years out of him and Tom Brady. I thought I was going to be able to push him a little bit more, and I just was pushing it to the limit, and I kind of got caught chasing quarterbacks. And what I am finding in these first 5 to 6 picks in these drafts is that I have 2 picks. I have there's 3 different leagues where I have 2 picks in the top 6. And what I'm doing is I'm taking Malik Nabers at 103 and then letting the quarterback that falls to me there, because I want to get some exposure to Malik Nabers. I think he's really good, and I think he's a pretty exciting player. And I haven't had a chance to draft him yet. And I've already had 3 or 4 rookie drafts completed. I haven't been able to get. I haven't had any Caleb or Marvin Harrison, which I'm depressed about, because I was hoping for that one of those early picks. I was going to get a little exposure. I haven't. That being said, I'm excited to get Malik Nabers and then push that. Get that top, what I consider a top wide receiver, and then let the quarterback who fall to me and let them make the decision for me, because I have a lot of exposure to some of these top 3 to 4 quarterbacks already.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of how I've been approaching these rookie drafts. And that's kind of, I'm excited to see what Malik Nabers can do in a kind of a wide open New York Giants wide receiver room, even though I'm not a huge Daniel Jones believer or even a Giants believer in general. But
so you can probably guess my next question. Who is somebody you want nothing to do with?
That's a really, really good question.
It's a toughie. You need a minute to think. I can ask Finero a quick question.
Yes. Give me
one. Finero, how did you feel about that pick? The Malik Nabers pick to your New York Giants? You're on mute.
So as a Giants fan, and you could kind of see the transparency, the Giants were between... Do we just pick a quarterback and get rid of this guy and move on? Or do we feel like we paid him this much? We got it. We'll offer some offers, but we really just want to get him a playmaker. I think if they were honest, and they won't be, that they were 50-50 on that decision. As a fan, how can you not like Malik Nabers? He does so much of his work after the catch that you don't have to depend on Daniel Jones as much as you think you need to.
Yeah.
He's not that deep ball threat, speed only.
You guys had a wide receiver like that.
Right. Malik Nabers is just that guy. You know what I mean? There's 2 guys and we got one of them. And that's super exciting as a Giants fan, especially after losing Saquon Barkley to the Eagles.
Yeah.
That was painful.
And Daniel Jones hasn't even had a... I mean, you tried with Galladay, but Daniel Jones hasn't had weapon like that.
It's to me, the Daniel Jones thing is the touchdowns. You could say that he doesn't have the weapons, and I hear you, I really do, but those touchdowns are just god awful. The guy doesn't average 1 touchdown a game. You know what I mean? It's just really hard to like that player. It just is. And it's been years now. And the 1 year that he wound up in the top 10, and it was just not last year, but the year before even, pretty recently, it was rushing yards. And it certainly wasn't touchdowns again. You know what I mean? So it's just this thing where I think everybody knows he's not the guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't know, are the Giants bad enough to get another good pick? Maybe. They might be, to be honest. But Nabers is going to make them that much better.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. To me, I'm absolutely not going to not get excited about Nabers.
Right.
I'm way too excited about the player and watching him on my team to wash that down with what I think the team should have done and blah, 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 blah. It's done. This is where we're at. We'll root for Daniel Jones to have a comeback and hope that Malik Nabers can help felicitate.
Dave, have you had a moment to think?
I have, and it's not a great answer because it's basically the running backs outside. I'm okay with draft. I've actually taken Trey Benson a couple spots that I wouldn't have thought, because I thought he was going to go more late first, and now I'm getting in the mid second, which I really like that price.
Mm-hmm.
But anything after Trey Benz, that second round rookie running back, the mid to late second round to early third round rookie running back range, I used to build and preach my rosters around attacking the running back, getting that running back, you know, mm-hmm. that we've had these conversations here in Rookie Fever about like what a James Robinson can do for your squad. What can these running backs, these immediate return on investment and what that can do. And for me, I'm taking swings at wide receivers in those positions because I think the way the NFL is kind of now too, or the college football is now, these wide receivers are just much more developed than they have been in the past. So I'm willing to just take a little bit more of a shot on these wide receivers because I just don't believe in these a lot of these rookie running backs. And yeah, so Jalen Wright's one of them, and I could be majorly wrong on him, but if you're that fast and you at Tennessee, why can't you get on the field more? I don't understand it. And I could probably be majorly wrong on that. And I know that's how they run it in Tennessee, but good running backs in college, like difference makers, they usually get on the field a little bit more. That's kind of how I guess I'll cap it off.
So we've talked a lot about quarterbacks and we've talked a lot about the running backs, some of them that hit for a year or two, some quarterbacks that didn't hit at all. How long does somebody like, we'll say James Robinson, Philip Lindsay, some of those guys, how long do they have to play at an RB2 level and or better for them to be worth the value that we put into them in our rookie drafts? Because we crap on it all the time, like, oh, James Robinson is done, they're this, they're that. But how long do they have to play for us to justify those picks?
The third round, I think you just need a good 5 to 6 week run, if I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not even like trying to be flippant.
Yeah.
I think James Robinson, after his rookie year, paid for himself for three. Like that was like a hitting on a first early first round pick mm-hmm. for a couple of years.
Fair enough.
And you know, trying to get more of him after that, maybe that wasn't, you know, it's very easy with hindsight bias to say, hey, that wasn't the move to make. But I think that's just when you get a stretch for running back and you don't pay a lot for him, especially there's just not that many players. And when you need that production at running back to win your squad,
yeah.
you need that production, especially your RB2 spot, because usually people have maybe that competitive team, you have that RB1 and that RB2 to get that streak to get you through bye weeks or just that hot streak in the end yeah. of the season to make it into the playoffs or whatever. I think it pays for itself. So when I'm sitting here crapping on Jalen Wright, if he hits, it pays for itself right. immediately. Yeah. And that's still the thing. But I still am having trouble pulling the trigger on those players for some reason.
Yeah, because a lot of times I feel like when people mention hit rate, like, oh, there's this. And we say here, too. So I'm not trying to sound like we're indifferent.
Yeah, I try to define it every time I bring it up, but I bring it up a lot.
Like a lot of times when we say that in my head, I'm thinking like stud, like he's a stud, like to be the hit rate is this. So the hit rate is this percentage. And a lot of times when we say that, we don't think of how viable some of these players can be on our dynasty teams versus like an RB1 or a top five RB, top wide receiver, top quarterback, especially in Superflex. We're starting two of them, so we need 24. Some of them are going to suck. But even Daniel Jones, like in a weird way with his rushing ability, he's been a hit in a little bit of a way.
Or the early second round pick in some leagues. I saw him go 202, 203 in leagues.
Yeah. And then I even think of Dave and your strategy of getting elder players at this point. Is Kirk Cousins a buy right now?
I don't like the Achilles, to be honest. It makes me a little nervous.
I like the contract.
Yeah, that's nice.
I hear you, though, because you even start to wonder, does Penix start week one or two just because of the injury?
I mean, I have no right to be fearful of the Achilles because the team wasn't.
Right.
The team who paid him all that money. It does still concern me from – I have a lot of cousins. I have a lot of cousins. I have a lot of golf. I have a lot of car. I have all those quarterbacks that nobody wants, right? And I finally have gotten away from Cousins at just the right time, traded him for Love on a team. Like, I'm kind of just done with him.
You should pick up all your cousins in your car and go golfing.
But I mean, given the contract, I have no reason to expect Kirk Cousins not to have, you know, a Kirk Cousins type year, top 12 again. You know, like I have no reason to believe that he's in a good situation again. Penix shouldn't change that.
I just have no idea what his cost is. That's my problem. I can't gauge like what you do the 110. So here's a question: when you do that 110, would you do instead of that the Chiefs running Pacheco pick, would you just swap out Pacheco for Cousins and that'd be a no-brainer?
That's a tough one, Dave. We've talked a lot about this game on this episode and how we have to evolve with the way the fantasy landscape is, the way your leagues are going. I feel like
if that quarterback pushes you over, right, Swags? Like
what I'm saying here, that's not where I'm going. Actually, where I'm going is worst case situation. I could probably throw Pacheco into my super flex spot and maybe feel a little bit better about it. As
who are you?
I know, right?
Couple of years, like not a big Kirk Cousins guy here for some reason. For a 110, would I do that?
Well, 110, and then that trade up that you did, just switch out Pacheco and get Cousins. Yeah. I would do it.
Great question.
I would do it.
I'd probably do it too, Dave, to answer your question. I think that I'd probably do it, yeah.
Pacheco confuses me, but the 110 doesn't. Does that make sense? Pacheco, like, makes that a hard answer because I know what I'm getting with Pacheco. And like Swag said, like, I might even be able to put that in my Superflex and BRE.
Yeah.
But as soon as you just say the 110, I'm like, yeah, I'll probably do that.
Take Kirk Cousins over.
Yeah. Over the 110. Over Xavier Worthy, yes.
Yeah. Kirk Cousins or Jared Goff.
Jared Goff.
Same.
I think Detroit loves him.
I don't understand that Goff. Hey, nobody wants Goff. Give him to me for cheap then. I thought he had a little more value. See, that's just how untapped I am. In my leagues, I can't get a Goff for anything.
Goff's always had hate.
Yes, that's the right.
Goff's been a wide receiver.
That's exactly what it is.
He's been a QB1 for every season of his career, except for his last two with the Rams. Like every season. Yep. Even his first seasons with the Rams, he was a QB1. He did pretty good, actually. He went to the Super Bowl, and then McVay started switching that offense around, wanted to blame it all on Goff, and his value dipped even more. He's never been valued that high. I mean, well, in the funny thing is, actually, is I'm lying to you all, because before Matthew Stafford was with the Rams, you could look back and you have years of ADP with Goff over Stafford. And then he sucked and they wanted Stafford. It's interesting. Look at some old DLF ADP, Dave. Like, check it out.
For sure. I would if I was still running there. I don't have access to it anymore.
Oh, wow. They didn't even let you just like hang around with some access. Those guys are quick.
It was cut. It was brutal. No, they were great over there, but no, I still get the newsletter.
Yeah. I love that.
There's no shade. There's no shade intended whatsoever. I just want
to. I know, but that was funny. I still get the newsletter.
Newsletters.
I have a little bonus hit. If you guys, we have time.
Bonus hit. We're
way past a bonus hit.
Yeah.
Last year, and this is a little bit more of a personal growth for me too. When I was running, I used to always, and I know this is really popular now. You build your team through wide receiver. Like, this is just traditional dynasty advice in a lot of different circles. You build through quarterback, you build through your wide receiver core, and then you invest in running backs and with your rookie picks. And that's how you build your squads. I feel like that's a really common way to build your dynasty squads for across the dynasty landscape. When I did that, I had this thing of where I needed my running backs to be over 210 pounds, run this fast and catch this many balls. And I had this little formula. And it was, you know, it was successful. It was good. But what I had to do was last year, I was on a show. I still wasn't doing a ton of content at the time, but they wanted me to come on and talk running backs. And I had to really sit and think about my running back process. And 3-4 years ago, I would have laughed at anyone who said to take, I'm blanking on his freaking. See, this is just how bad I am. The Detroit running back,
Dave.
Not Montgomery. No, not Montgomery.
Not Gibbs.
Gibbs. Sorry. Oh. Wow. That was a huge brain fart. So I would have laughed at people to say to draft Gibbs because he didn't meet my threshold. He didn't get enough carries in college. All these things. I would have said why not to take him. And I took a hard look at myself and I said, look, he has the speed. He has the pass catching ability and that's these pluses. And he had they really wanted him in Detroit. They talked him up why they wanted him. And I just realized that you can win in other ways, and especially in that class. There weren't a lot of other great options. And I had, Gibbs as my 102 in Superflex ranks, and I crushed in all my leagues, right? So I did it in my leagues. I took Gibbs 102 and I got laughed at. And would I have loved to take CJ Stroud at 102, but that wasn't my thought process. It wasn't Stroud or Gibbs for me. I took Gibbs and it just paid off. big time for me, Gibbs, my Gibbs love. And it had more of an evaluation of like, you know, if they're good enough in other ways, you don't necessarily have to be just a total workhorse. You can add value in different ways. And that's what, and I nailed, and actually, and I got him in several places I never would have gotten him in years past. And they really helped my squads of trying to get out of the size thing. Now I've gotten off of some at Achan. I'm doing butchering his name a little bit now, but
I always do. It's more fun for me.
I think Swags does it on purpose at this point.
With A Chain, I do, because you can be A Chain in the membrane, but you can't be a Chan.
Yeah, Achan is weird. Yeah, it doesn't work.
Old Rookie Fever episode where I just repeatedly the entire episode said the guy's name wrong for the entire episode just to piss off Khalil Herbert.
Khalil Herbert.
Yeah,
Khalil. Good old Khalil.
Yeah, so that's kind of my big thing was is that, you know, you have to kind of be a little bit more flexible and you can't be quite as rigid with certain things. And it's not like a way to live. Now I'm not going out of my way and drafting wicked uber light running backs everywhere, but you have to be a little flexible and take advantage of it. And I did that with Gibbs and it really paid off for me.
So, okay. One more really quick. We'll get out of here. How do you guys feel about Jonathan Brooks?
I like his value where he's going in drafts. I think I'm going to own him.
Same. I like his pass catching. I think he'd been a top five pick. Well, it's tough with a quarterback. I think he'd be valued a lot more if he didn't have the knee injury.
I'm going to like him a lot more if I know he's starting in week one. Able to play week one. Like if I start hearing like news where he's not healthy, he's not in training camp, he's not doing that, he's not ready. I'm going to start feeling Kendre Miller.
Yeah,
I'm an injury optimist.
Or like Roschon Johnson, who he didn't even surpass in college. And Roschon Johnson, I don't think really showed that he's successful in the NFL lately at all in his last year, his only year. So just knowing that Bijan's one thing, but then not to get past Roschon. I know it's college, it's a different game. Those guys are biding their time a little bit differently, playing against different athletes. I have my concerns, I guess.
Yeah, and that's why you can get him as late as you can, and because you can get him that late is why I'm interested. Him and Trey Benson. Yeah. Him and Trey Benson, I think you have to look at. I know you're probably a Trey Benson optimist, Swags, just not really being a huge James Conner guy, knowing that James Conner gets hurt all the time. Arizona's a nice landing spot. I think Trey Benson plays this year. I think Jonathan Brooks plays a little bit this year, and we'll get to see. Mm-hmm. But I think when you're talking about like a mid second or early second and you're getting these running backs, like I'm going to have a hard time. Like I'm trying to cool myself off. Like I looked at last year and I saw Achane, who was drafted in the NFL in the third round, Charbonnet in the second, Tajay Spears in the third, Tank Bigsby in the third. There's not good names there.
No.
And I remember buying into the second round to get Tank Bigsby. I remember, you know, like Charbonnet, I was never on. Everybody was sharp on him. But, you know, Charbonnet flashed out of this group, you know, like there's some hope for him. And he was the earliest draft pick out of those four I mentioned. But I was trying to use last year to kind of cool me off a little bit because the value was just so good to me, like in the drafts that I've seen. You know, you're getting. Let's see what we got here. I got Brooks at 111 in this draft, Trey Benson at 202 in this draft. Another one I got Brooks at 112, Trey Benson at 203. Like these are really nice spots. These are spots in the past that we've talked about that it starts to really dry up by 206. So if I'm getting a running back, I mean, Chuba Hubbard is not scaring me. I think he was like tied for 45th on yards per carry. Like he's okay. He had 238 carries, 900 yards. 5 touchdowns. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's okay. I think that they drafted, and he also was a fourth round pick himself. And we've gone into talking about how these running backs don't last very long when they're drafted that late. You know, so his replacement got better draft capital. The team that has Chuba and Miles Sanders is like, we need this guy. So, yeah. Like, I feel like there's a lot of positive things to like about Jonathan Brooks. I don't like that he's coming into the season hurt. I just feel like that's really bad for rookies.
So I could keep going, boys, but this has been a long.
I know. We pushed it. We pushed it a little late for you. Dave, super appreciate you coming back. The welcome mat is always here. He is @FF_spaceman.
Yep.
Lowercase.
I knew.
Lowercase, but upper class.
Oh.
Goodness, don't get me emotional here, boys.
As always, at Artbark TV, is at Swag00G. This is at Rookie Peter. We are out. When you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, fever all through the night. Sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up the night. I light up when you call my name, and you know I'm gonna treat you right. Rookie fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. That is something you all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago now. Who got the 101 stallion? He's never done this to before and run. I told you anyone's size must be just on real landing spot. Not ideal. Wait, when's this breakout? It's full rookie fever stage. Romeo loved Juliet. Juliet, she felt the same. When he pulled his arms around her, he said, Julie, baby, you're my friend. I'll give a fever when we kiss it. Fever with our flame in you. Fever, I'm a fire. Fever, yeah, I burn for soon. So who's got the fever? Cause I got the fever. Now you got the fever. So she got the fever. And he got the fever. No cure for the fever. So let's feed the fever. Thank God for the fever. Thank God for the fever. What a lovely way you burn.